mic stand right there and then have the arm that comes out in front of your face.
Oh, I see, so that I can't reach it.
Right.
You're a jerk.
Yeah, well, you're the jerk who can't stop playing with your mic. Hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, March 2024. What is today? Let me check the calendar. Today is Monday, March 17th, a week ahead, 2014, and you're listening to episode 94. My name's Rob. With me is Jason.
Man.
Yeah, you just sit there. I say hi. You know, I say Jason, then you go.
Because I'm just so let down by your. What happened, man? You used to be good at doing intros. And
well,
now
you used to make fun of me because I would make notes to read every time. And now I've stopped making notes because you made fun of me so much. Fun of me because I'm not making notes.
I have a feeling the making notes thing is just because you're lazy. That's why you don't do it anymore.
It was still that I didn't have to think about the episode number and the date and the year and everything. But I figured, like, we're approaching 100 episodes now. And I feel like, yeah, I could probably do that. Okay. This is, in fact, I haven't read notes in like 12 episodes. And this is the first time I mixed it up.
No, it's not. You mixed up the year, like, last episode.
Okay, maybe three episodes ago. But that's in my defense, it's because it's a new year, and that's hard to remember. Shut up. What's new?
I'm listening to a podcast.
What's new with you?
Not much. Stuff's going on. Stuff and stuff.
Oh, yeah?
And
what
things.
Kind of stuff?
Not a lot.
Stuff?
Stuff. So working on lots and lots of prototypes. I've been a prototype machine lately.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, you've been ridiculous. You've just been banging them out.
Yeah, I get in these times where, like, I'll make like four prototypes in a month, maybe mm-hmm. five, mm-hmm. and then other times where I won't make any for 2 months, you know?
Yeah.
It kind of depends. I feel like when I have an idea I'm really into, I make less of them. But right now that's not the case because, you know, I've got Ramblers, and that's been going really well.
Really well, yeah. Hopefully, you heard the recording, the playtest we recorded that we posted last week. We've played it a second time since then.
Yeah.
Man, it's good.
Yeah, I know. It's mm-hmm. feeling really good. And we found some more issues that mm-hmm. I think I fixed for the next playtest, mm-hmm. Which will probably be in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
But yeah, just because we've got some other stuff, we're working on your game right now, Innkeepers. Mm-hmm.
Innkeepers.
Yeah. Which you should have an episode publishing this Wednesday.
Yeah, this coming Wednesday. Yep. Uh-huh. Yeah, we recorded the first playtest, which was both a horrible disaster and a huge success at the same time.
It's only a horrible disaster because I killed you guys.
Oh, well, I expected one person to run away with it. And yeah, but I think it was a horrible disaster because so much of the balancing was terrible.
Yeah, I mean, it was. But I mean, we actually were able to do some balancing right in there. Like,
but yeah,
the idea that you have these resource cubes and these gold cubes, you're like, make those worth the same.
Yeah.
Done. Like, that's a huge balance right there.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Man, it's fun, though. I like it.
Yeah, I was pretty happy with it, too. I mean, so what you been playing, I guess, is what we're doing right here. Yeah, so the playtest went super well. Let me recap that for listeners, mm-hmm. I suppose. On last week's show, I pitched the Innkeepers game, where you are the owner of a tavern in a medieval setting, and you're trying to expand your tavern, add on different rooms to attract noblemen and things to earn money and prestige and so on and so forth. And we playtested that, and it went really well. It was kind of a simple version of the game. In fact, I already had plans. After I pitched it, I started putting together a bunch of notes and put together my first prototype. And then before we even had a chance to playtest the first prototype, I started making revisions,
right.
You know, increasing some powers and changing some balancing things. But we went ahead and played the basic original version there, which is what I had the components put together for. And it went super well. It's super mega broken, and I think the economy of it was super broken. But it was very successful in just the act of, like, assembling your inn out of those tiles felt really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It sure did. Yeah, I mean, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm pretty pleased. And I've already gone forward and made a bunch of the revisions that we talked about, and I printed all new components yesterday, and tonight, after we're done recording, I'll be sticking stuff to cardboard and cutting it all out again, so we'll have another version ready to play this weekend. So look forward to some more play test recordings of that soon. And I guess I should say, I am hitching a ride with a couple of our buddies to Protospiel Milwaukee next weekend. I'm going to ride with Jeff from Happy Mitten Games and our good buddy Jason Katarski. The three of us are going to ride down. We're going to be there on Saturday only. That's Saturday the 22nd. We'll probably be getting in about mid-morning and leaving about 8 or 9 o'clock that night. So we'll be there for the most, pretty much the whole day on Saturday. I think I'm going to pretty much be exclusively testing innkeepers. That's mm-hmm. the only thing I plan to bring with me.
You might, I mean, it's the game that could use the most feedback, and getting 5 or 6 playtests in really will help that.
Yeah. So, you know what? The playtime on it was pretty good, too. I think we played in about 35 minutes with 3 players.
Yeah.
Yeah, which was very encouraging, too.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are in the Milwaukee area, or if you're coming to Protospiel Milwaukee, come and find me. I'll be wearing my BTG t-shirt.
So yeah, look and for that. I mean, I already know there's at least one other builder that'll be there, and that's Neil Roberts is going to be there.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, unfortunately, I can't make it this time. I have another commitment. So this time I get to be jealous of you going to a gaming event.
Right.
Like last time with me with Unbub. So.
Right.
Yeah, and I've heard Protospiel is awesome.
Yeah, I have too.
There's another one in July, but you're going to be in Europe. Uh-huh. So hopefully I can hit that
one. I hope
so.
I'm bummed I'm going to miss it, but I'm going to Europe, so that's not so bad.
It's a trade-off. Yeah. You know? Gosh, if I have to go to Europe.
Yeah. So anyway, walk us through some of the stuff on Ramblers.
Yeah. So the, it feels really balanced now. It feels really, really balanced. With the exception of there. So we switched it up before. Like when I was working there before, it made it so that instead of having a betting system, it's just a straight ante. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really nervous about that just because people like betting, right?
Betting is fun, but it's betting also messy.
It was messy, and it was making the game take a long time, and it was taking away some of that approachability. So first there was scaled antes, which was just a nightmare because all of the Ramblers had different money, right? Like all they had different starting money. So based on the set you got, I tried really hard to make it balanced so that percentage-wise, you had about a 90% chance of having enough money to play every hand with the antes. That was tough. Like, and if you didn't, it was frustrating because, you know, I just, so now you and I actually figured this out together, which is mm-hmm. brilliant. I love this. Took the money off the Ramblers, leaving money on there. Cause see, money was kind of the great balancer of the game because I could take a Rambler with really good stats and give them hardly any money, or a Rambler with really bad stats and give them a ton of money. I mean, there's one character, the Stagecoach guy. He is terrible. All mm-hmm. of his scores are abysmal, but he gets $500 as long as he gets 200 to start and 300 when you put him into play,
right,
which is huge.
Mm-hmm.
It's more than anyone else gets. And that's why you pick. That's why you use him.
Right.
But other than that, he's a waste. So now everyone's going to get the same starting money, which is $1,800. And there's 9 rounds in the game, 9 rounds of poker.
Mm-hmm.
So first 3 rounds, $100 each. Second 3 rounds, $200 each. Third 3 rounds, $300 each.
Yeah.
So here's what's cool about that. It kind of gives the illusion of the scale building, right? Even though it is, right? The last poker hands are certainly worth more than the first poker hands.
Yeah.
But because you all have the same starting money, it's not like it's really that. It's not like the level of play is really increasing that much, but I'm pretty confident it's going to feel like it is.
Yeah.
Because at the end, when you were sitting there when we were playing with $1,200, $1,300,
mm-hmm.
and I had 300, I was like, gosh, Rob is just killing it. And if I win one pot, it's $300. It's not going to matter.
Right.
But in the last round in a 3-player game now, it's $900. That's going to mean something.
Yeah, it sure does.
So everyone starts with the same. Everybody starts with enough cash to get them through the whole game.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are some ways to lose cash. But they're very few and far between.
Mm-hmm.
And if they happen to you, it's because you let them happen to you.
Yeah.
So most of the time, with cash, you should make it through the whole game. You now have 5 Ramblers. For 9 rounds, that means your Ramblers have to survive an average of less than 2 rounds,
mm-hmm.
slightly less. And then the other big thing is I'm going to add bounties back in. Originally, all the Ramblers had separate bounties.
Yeah.
And at the end of the game, every $100... or one whiskey shot, or one Rambler you killed, or one Rambler still alive on your team, or in your posse, I guess, all of those count as 1 point. So now, you're also going to have the bounty. So that means that if I kill your Rambler, he's not 1 point. He's somewhere between 1 and 5 points.
Yeah.
So that's the new balancer. So like the sheriff, who's amazing, like he can always call people out. He gets a huge bonus to fighting.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to get a killing if you take him out. Like you're going to get like 500.
Yeah.
You know, because the bounties, and I'll explain this in the rules, the bounties aren't like just wanted bounties. It's like what the other people would pay to see them go down.
Sure. You know what I mean? Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I really feel good about the game, man. It's, you know, for a game that a few months ago I was really feeling frustrated about before Unpub and having trouble with and feeling like I was having trouble getting it together, and then I got it together for Unpub and we, you know, we tested it and I felt good about it. And then ever since then, it's just been up. So yeah. I'm super happy with it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the other thing that still needs some work are the special powers on the poker cards themselves.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah. That- I'm adding... There's 52 poker cards, I think. Or no, 54, sorry.
Okay.
And for, I think, maybe like... So, 54 poker cards, that's 108 poker hands.
Yeah.
Because there's two hands in each card. I would say maybe 30 of them had powers. And I'm going to increase that to where it's half or more. Mm-hmm. That way, almost every card has a power on it. Just because we found that really makes the game fun. You can be losing poker... And not getting to do that, you could be last place every time. But if you can do special abilities, they still allow you to be valuable in the game.
Yeah,
and force other things to happen.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and I think that's good. I think that's good. But yeah, so Gunsling Ramblers, that's great. Good progress. Yeah,
I'm feeling really good about it. So earlier today, we sent out some tweets and said, "Hey," because we always send out tweets and say, "Hey." I don't. Why do I say send out tweets? It's really not that. It's tweeted, right?
You handed a little rolled up piece of paper. Well, you took a little rolled up piece of paper and you tied it to the leg of a bird, and then you let the bird fly.
And the bird was like tweet, 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 tweet. Right. You have no idea what the paper said because the bird just says tweet. But,
right. But yeah,
unless it was a parrot. Still can't read though.
Can't read.
Man,
nope.
Bummer.
Yeah, you just gotta hope somebody catches that parrot, and then rips that thing off its leg.
Or, what if it was that three-eyed crow from Game of Thrones? It could just get into your dreams and tell you stuff?
I haven't seen that far.
Yeah, you have. You watched season three. I know you have.
Yeah, no.
It's not a spoiler. There's a three-eyed crow. It's in, like, season two. In one, I think.
Like, episode four of season one or something. Yeah, okay. All right. I'm just
So, anyways...
What are we talking about?
Tweeting. So, I tweeted. Yeah. You know, a lot of times you ask for questions, but this time I was like, hey, let's ask for some features. Because... I mean, we're honest about the fact that sometimes we have trouble knowing what we should talk about on the show.
Yep.
So today, I tweeted and said, hey, anybody got any cool features to talk about? And we got two really good ones. Mm-hmm. We're going to do one of those this week and one of those next week.
Yeah.
The one we're going to talk about this week is from Andy Lennox.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a great question because it's so hard to answer.
Yeah, I'm not sure that I have an answer for it.
I think we have some good discussion points, though, that we can talk about for how we think we know the answer. And his question was, when is a game done? How many iterations does it take before you feel like a game is done? So that's what we're going to talk about today. Mm-hmm. And now, I know off the bat that he knows there's no standard answer to that, right?
Right.
Some games you could play five times and be like, well, this is the game. Like, this is done.
Mm-hmm.
Other games you're going to have to play 500 times and that's still not going to be the case, you know? Mm-hmm. So how do you know when it's done? You have any thoughts on that?
Well, I don't know who originally said this quote. I've heard it from several different sources, but somebody, some smart guy at some point in history said that art is never finished. It's just abandoned, right? And that's maybe elevating the idea of a board game to
that's optimistic, man.
Yeah, it's. I don't know. I mean, they can be artistic, but I think the message there is that a creative work.
So this would be the board game. Board games are never done; they're just published.
Yeah, right. There you go. A board game is never finished; it's just published,
which can be true because expansions.
More so now that expansions are so popular,
right?
And just the idea of house ruling, you know,
right?
You know, so how do you know that it's good enough for that, though? I think maybe is the more correct question to ask. And let me talk about Rumplebum then.
Okay.
So Rumplebum is the only project that I have completed, in quotes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I've talked before about all the stuff that I still want to do to it,
mm-hmm.
that I probably will never get around to doing, let's be honest. So Rumpelbum, I had a pretty strict deadline with that one. You know, I wanted to submit it for the GameCrafter contest, which I lost.
You just didn't win.
I lost. I saw how many votes I got. I lost. Not as bad as some other people, but I super lost. So I had a deadline, right? So I knew I have to have everything done and submitted to the contest by X date. I know that one of the steps that I have to do before that is I have to buy a copy for myself to look at and proof, and that will take Y amount of time. So I have date Z, which takes place Y amount of time before date X. Okay. And so I had to have the game working, and I had to have artwork put together. I had to have the cards assembled and functional and not get in the way of playing the game. Facilitate the gameplay with the card art, right? So one of the mistakes that I made early on in designing is doing the art before finishing the game. You know? And that's a terrible idea.
No, it's something that every single person will tell you.
A lot of us do that.
Except
right?
For Chevy. Chevy will tell you not to do that.
Yeah.
Because Chevy does art before he even thinks of a game.
Right. He'll just do art and be like, I should make a game out of this.
But it's because he likes doing art.
Right,
so.
Yeah. And I do too. Right.
Right.
So on Rumpelbum, I was trying to be very careful to make sure that I had a game working before I spent a bunch of time on the art. Boy, man, this is a hard question.
So, okay. So, rule number one, you're done when the deadline comes. That's when the game is done. When you hit the deadline, that's the drop dead deadline.
That's when your iterations are finished, yeah.
And I think there's a couple different ways to think about being done, too. Is there done as in, this is ready to be submitted to a publisher? Or done, the publisher's happy, let's publish the game.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think are two completely different things.
That's
so,
true.
I mean, I guess I would go from the idea of ready to submit to a publisher or ready to publish it yourself. So in my mm-hmm. case, Water Balloon Washout's one I can talk about. The only game I've actually put out for sale eventually. Yeah. You know, but I mean,
someday.
It's been submitted. It's printing.
Who knows when that'll happen, though?
Rob is exaggerating.
It's been so long. It's been so long, dude.
Very soon. So it's currently printing. I just checked on that today. So printing and assembling. Mm-hmm. But with that game, there was a turning point with that. I play tested it several times with people at work, and they seemed to enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd make a tweak here and there, and they seemed to enjoy it even more. And then they would say, hey, can we play this again? And they didn't give feedback. They just wanted to play it again. And then I showed it to you for the first time, and your feedback was, this game is done. Mm-hmm. You should really just make this game now. That was what you told me. Mm-hmm. Those are almost your exact words. And I thought, well, that's good. Like, that makes me feel like... So what I started to notice was I kept showing it to other people, but the feedback I kept getting was, if you really want to make the game more complex, you could do this, this, and this, but if you're looking to keep it as a simple game that does this, it's ready.
Mm-hmm.
I have these little tweaks. When you get to that point, I think it's safe to say, I feel like the game is done. I feel like I'm ready.
That's probably a good way to see that, yeah. Yeah, that made me think of Maelstrom. And getting to the point where we were at Grand Con and got a bunch of testing done and playing it after that. And a lot of people had a lot of good ideas, but it got to the point where all the feedback I was getting was suggestions on how to make it more complex.
Yep.
Or how to make the goals of the game change.
Right.
How to make, what you're doing different than the game I was trying to make.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when the suggestions I was getting were not in line with the goals that I had for the game.
Right.
And that people were no longer criticizing what my goals were, but trying to say, well, what if you had these other goals?
Right. You know? Because it sounds more fun to me.
Because they felt like the goals that I was trying to achieve had been met.
Right.
And they were trying to, and they were still trying to be helpful, of course.
Right, of course.
You know,
and that is helpful in itself. Like,
yeah.
When you're like, wow, these people are stretching, trying to find new goals
mm-hmm.
because my goals
new
are
new ways
met.
To improve this right. or something, right? Yeah. So that, you know, that's probably a good measure.
I think so.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously it depends on the level of complexity. Like, there's a couple of different ways to think about it too. Like, for instance, Sandbox Showdown, right? That's another good one that I've worked on.
Yeah.
I feel like that game is done with the exception of it needs some more balancing with some of the components.
Yeah.
Because
right.
there's so many variable player powers in the game.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, again, it's tough to measure the different levels of, you know.
Yeah, so that's a good point. So you know that that's not done as in ready to publish, but you do feel like it's done as far as putting in front of a publisher.
Exactly, because the core game works.
Mm-hmm. It works
and
very
any,
well.
And any publisher worth their salt can look and say, oh, these couple abilities are wonky,
mm-hmm, but I
cut
see,
those or change them.
But I see as a whole that this right. works well, and I see the message here, and yeah.
Right. It's like with Ramblers. I feel like I'm getting close because the changes I'm ready to make now mm-hmm. are all like, tweak this ability, add a few more here. So I really feel like as we go through the next like three drafts of Ramblers, it's mm-hmm. going to keep getting just more and more change this little thing, change that yeah. little thing. And I think that's something you see is things start to scale down, which yeah. is why with Sandbox Showdown, when someone came back to me and said, completely revamp how you play this game to make it a better game.
Yeah.
I was like, whoa, I'm ready to just do balancing changes.
Yeah.
Turns out they were right. And the game is way better now, like 1,000 times better.
Yeah.
But so I think you always should be open to that. Right.
Of course.
But you know, I think that those, when you're down to making those little changes that in every iteration, there's, you know, less and less to change. That's when you should know you're getting close to done.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably the most, you know, the most concise thing I could say about that.
Yeah.
So anyways, yeah, well, I think that's a really good thing to think about mm-hmm. is the tighter your iterations get. When you're still making sweeping changes, your game is not close to being done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so back to Rumplebum then. So Rumplebum felt like it was working, that the structure of the game was working. It's a very simple game.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a lot of variables you can tweak in it. You know, there's no economy to it. There's no money. It's just about, you know, get the card, get the next card, get the third card, put them together to get the thing, you know?
It's not rocket science.
Right. It was a very simple game. So I didn't have a ton of balancing to do. I was limited by some very specific parameters for the Game Crafter contest in terms of deck size and that sort of thing.
And the cost to produce.
And the cost to produce, right. So I felt like within the limited parameters that I have, which can be a good thing, of course, we've talked about it before, that sometimes restrictions certainly. Can be very helpful.
Yes. Restrictions can be freeing sometimes.
I felt like I had the game working as well as I needed it to and wanted it to within those parameters. And then I needed to start working on the art and start putting the cards together. And I knew what my deadline was and I knew what I was capable of. And so I just kind of had to stop. I just kind of had to stop developing the mechanics and move forward with the artwork to get it done in time.
But let's be honest. How much more would the mechanics have changed? 10% at most, maybe?
Maybe more like 5%.
Yeah,
maybe,
I mean, you know, at that point, you know, because the thing is, the game can never be done if you want it not to be.
Sure.
You can keep tweaking mm-hmm. stuff, tweaking stuff, and eventually you're going to hit that point mm-hmm. where you're not making it better.
Right.
You're now moving away from your target. And that's, you know, I mean, that's not what you want.
Right. And the worst thing you can do is keep working on the same game for 10 years,
right.
you know. Because what are you wasting your time on then?
Well, I mean, I think it's okay to work on your same game for 10 years as long as that's not the only game you're working on.
Yeah.
And hey, if you're a builder out there and you're really excited about working on one game for 10 years, we're not telling you you're wrong, just mm-hmm. to be clear. We're just saying that if you want to get published, you know, I mean, there's going to come a time when you're going to want to work on something mm-hmm. else because if that idea is not hitting,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Right. Flex your muscles. Yeah. Keep trying new stuff. Don't be afraid to set something down and try something new.
You know, I was, speaking of that, flexing your muscles, I was talking to Andy Lennox, we talk on GChat a lot, just typing back and forth, you know, and we were talking about how many prototypes we'd done and how much testing we'd done, and he had said, I was thinking lately about the 1,000 hours rule. Have mm-hmm. you heard of that?
Yeah, sure.
From like the book,
I don't know what book.
Oh, Outliers by Malcolm Gladwell.
Okay.
It's a really good book that talks about people that are really good at things, like experts. And there seems to be this like, or is it 10,000 hours? I think it's 10,000 hours.
It's probably 10,000 hours.
Yeah, that people that practice something for around 10,000 hours tend to be really good at it. So like mm-hmm. when you look at sports players or musicians, you know, like they all started at a young age and they kind of hit that point. And because it's just part of them.
Yeah.
And I really feel like that is the same with design. I mean, when I look at how I used to approach designs, it was funny when we had Bruno Cathala on mm-hmm. The last episode of Something from Nothing, which watch that, by the way, that guy's a genius.
Yeah.
Also, before you guys came on, he played us a ukulele version of Money for Nothing. So just want you to know, it was pretty awesome.
I missed that. I joined late.
You can. I think if you look at his Google Plus page, he has another version of him doing that.
That's pretty sweet.
It's pretty awesome. Because it's a ukulele, right?
Yeah.
And he's awesome. But one of the things he said to us was, your first game design is probably 5 games. Because you just want to add things. And that was so me in the beginning.
Yeah.
You were better about that because you always wanted simple designs. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's funny because you've actually worked into doing more complex designs.
It's true.
Very organically, which is great for you because you kind of respected the small game. And now I'm kind of working backwards, going to the simpler games because I'm able to kind of rein myself in.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that just made me think of that. But so back to the whole idea of when is your game done? I think the things we've said are probably a pretty decent example, but there's no hard and fast rules, you know?
Right.
Depends on the game. You know, and I think too, you need to start, one of the things that's another good benchmark is when you're doing the kind of the check sheets that people are filling out for you with testing your games.
Mm-hmm.
If people are continually checking, I would buy this game, that's probably a good sign, right?
Sure.
Because most people don't want to buy games that are completely not ready for sale.
Yeah, right, yeah.
So
Moving on. Yeah. So, practicing the pitch.
Yeah. I'm going to pitch a game this week.
It's time for that.
I'm super excited about this game.
Good.
You know, we sometimes on the show, we admit we're not super duper excited about a game we're pitching. Mm-hmm. It's an idea. We want to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not going to prototype. We're not going to make it. Well, this one, folks, that's the prototype right here.
Before pitch.
Yep.
Yeah.
The rules are written. They're really ugly and they're really hard to understand.
Basically, it's going to launch on Kickstarter in like 3 weeks.
It's actually already out there.
Oh, okay.
No. But I feel really good about it. So a little background on this game. This game came from, I was inspired by this game from two things that happened. And I like to talk about these things, kind of like what makes me think of game ideas.
Sure.
Because I think it's kind of fun and I'm always interested to hear that from other people.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened with me was, I told you guys a story before when I was on the way to Unpub and I was talking to Jason and Andy about what if you had a game where you held the cards facing outward and then Andy was like, yeah, and you could do this and this. And I was like, yeah. And he's like, dude, that's Hanabi. You're an idiot. And then they kept saying, hey, remember when you won the Spiel de Jahres?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that played into it. And then, Katarsky, when we were going there he's a big punk fan. And, which if you listen to the 20 Minutes of Filler podcast, you'll know from the theme song. So
yeah, that's his band, right?
I'm not sure if it is or not.
Oh, okay.
I don't know why it wouldn't be. It seems like it probably is. I know that if I was in a punk band and I wanted a punk band to do the theme, I would use my own punk band.
Yeah. Right.
So anyways, he was like, man, I haven't listened to Rancid in a long time. So he downloaded Rancid and Out Come the Wolves. And we listened to the album like twice through.
Such a good album.
It's so good. And there's a song called Junkie Man. And in that, they talk at one point. And one of the things they say, like they talk about a field and they say, and out come the wolves. And that stuck with me.
Junkie Man, tell me what the story
is. Yeah, that's the one. And so the name of this game is And Out Come the Wolves. But it's not about punk rock.
What?
Yeah, sorry. Okay, so here's how this game works. You are a homesteader in Alaska. It's a card game, cards only. Right now it's 144 cards, way more than I like, but I'm having trouble cutting it down. Hopefully after a few play tests, I'll be able to cut 20, 30 cards out.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
By 20, 30, I mean 18 or 36. So anyways, here's how the game works. You are homesteaders in Alaska. There are 2 to 4 homesteaders in Alaska, and you are trying to build up your homestead to survive. The problem is there's this huge pack of wolves that's terrorizing you every night, eating your livestock, wrecking your stuff. Like there's hundreds of them, right? Big problem. So what you do is there for the components wise, it's just cards. There is a deck of 68 day cards, a deck of 48 night cards, and then like a deck of 30-ish buildings. You at the beginning are dealt a hand of day cards, and what's going to happen is you're going to hold those day cards Hanabi style, so facing away from you, right? And then all the players at their homestead are allowed during the day to look in the woods for resources. basically. Like, they're out in their field and they're out in the woods looking for resources. So the player to their left represents the woods closest to them, right? Mm-hmm. And that works for each player right in the circle. So drafting style, what we would do is I would say I would look at the resources and I can see what they are because they're facing me. Mm-hmm. The person doesn't know, but everybody else knows, right? I look at the one I want, take it, put it face down in front of me. Everybody goes around. Rinse, repeat as many times as you want. The catch is every time you take one, your opponent will draw a card from the knight deck. They take that card. They put it in their hand facing them. Okay? So you mm-hmm. now can't see it. They're not allowed to tell you what the card is, but they are allowed to table talk to you about how bad it might be or might not be. But they're encouraged to bluff about that, right?
Okay.
So you could take all five cards if you wanted. You have to do it one at a time. So each person, you know, so it's going around. Once everybody feels like they've taken enough, it becomes dusk. And at dusk, you take out all your resources that you've just taken, and some of them will be things like pigs and cows and chickens or caribou meat or mm-hmm. salmon. But primarily, it's or bullets or arrows, but it's, a lot of it is logs, right? Mm-hmm. And use those logs to build various things. So the building cards are kind of set out in stacks, almost like a deck builder would be.
Okay.
Does that make sense? Each one of them has a cost. You start with a lean-to. You start with a lean-to on your property. Mm-hmm. And from that lean-to, you can upgrade that lean-to to be a shack, right? So I would take three logs I would have to spend. And the cards that I get, like, have anywhere between three to six logs on them, right?
Oh, okay.
The resource cards.
Sure.
But when you spend a card, you spend it all. So if there's something for three and all I have is one card with six logs on it, I'm going to have to spend it all to get mm-hmm. it. Make sense?
Sure.
And then there's a scarcity of resources because there's only three shacks in a four-player game, which means that only three people can upgrade to a shack. But then after that is the cabin, and whenever you upgrade, you have to trade in the last thing you had.
Hmm.
So if three people get to a shack, and I'm still the lean-to, until someone upgrades to a cabin, which is the next level, mm-hmm. I can't upgrade. Does that
make sense? You can't jump stages? You can't jump from lean-to to cabin?
If in one turn you had enough, you could buy the cabin,
okay.
then just trade it back out again, right? Right. Each of those things are going to be worth points at the end of the game.
Okay.
But each of them also allow you to defend against wolves, right? Or ignore, as it says in the rules. You can also get bullets. Bullets lay down in front of you, and arrows, which also lay down in front of you. So here's what happens. Now, you've built up your stuff. You spend as many resources as you want. The other resources you have go in a stack face up in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
And then it becomes night. And when nighttime happens, the idea of, and out come the wolves. So then you take your hand and you flip it around. And now everybody can see all the wolves that have been, like, have found you, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in the knight deck, it's mostly wolves, but some cards have one wolf on them. Some have four.
Mm.
So you don't know. Like, you can have four cards and have four wolves. Or you can have four cards and have 12 wolves.
So you don't know
right.
what wolf is about to attack. How many wolves?
No, yeah, you don't know until it happens.
So I drew the knight card deck, and those wolves pointed away from me?
Correct.
Oh, I thought they pointed inward.
They point, you're not drawing it. So, okay. So I'm player one, you're player two in a two-player game.
Yeah.
I draft a resource from your hand.
So I'm holding a hand of resource cards, and they're
facing
all
me.
Facing you.
Yep.
I can't, all I see are card backs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. So you take one.
Yep.
And then I have to draw a knight card.
And you face it towards you.
And I face towards me.
So okay. All I know is how many knight cards you have. I don't know what's on them. And
so
you can
I've
be
got
like
five. Now I have four resource cards and one knight card. And mm-hmm. the four resource cards, I don't know what they are, but I know I have a wolf or four wolves on this one mm-hmm. card. Okay. And then on the dusk cycle, and then I do the same thing. I take resource from you. Mm-hmm. And those cards that I take are on the table.
And
in
we
front
go
of
back
me.
And forth.
Go back and
forth.
And
you know, you can say like, should I take another one? And you're like, oh, I don't know, man. You've got a okay. lot of wolves
oh,
over
so
here.
Oh, so the wolves that I'm drawing into my hand are going to attack you.
Yes.
Okay, I'm with you now.
Does that make sense?
Got it.
So, okay, so you got that now. So let's go back to a four-player game.
Are any of the knight cards not wolves?
Yes, there's okay. the full moon, which makes it so that you can't ignore wolves in okay. a full moon. There's a new moon, which means that you can ignore every wolf if you want to. There's penalties for ignoring the wolves, so we'll get to that.
Okay.
And then there's the new moon is, I don't remember what the new moon does. Something semi-beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the thunderstorm, which says you can ignore all wolves. Because basically, it's easy to hide from wolves in a thunderstorm.
Okay.
Because they sure. can't really track you and things are loud.
Okay.
So yeah, so now it's night. So now I'm player two, you're player one. No, I'm sorry, I'm player one, you're player two. So I'm whatever. You're the player to the left of me. So now I see how many wolves you have. So you're going to take them out of your hand and you're going to lay them down in front of me. Okay?
Sure.
There's six wolves, say. I have the ability to hide from two of them because of my shack that I've built. So that says I may ignore two wolves. Maybe I've also built an animal pen, which says I can ignore two more wolves. So now I can ignore four wolves, and then I have my bullets, right?
Okay.
All right. So I look at the cards and I think, what am I going to do here? Well, if I can ignore four wolves, and there's five, say. Let's go with five. I could kill one of them, right? So that's what my bullets are for. So my bullets are sitting there, and it's just one card that says bullets on it. And if I want to kill a wolf, I tap it to the right. I kill another wolf, tap it again. Kill another wolf, tap it one more time. That fourth wolf that I would kill, it turns face back up again, and then I throw it away, because those were my bullets.
Because you're out of bullets.
Yep. So it's an easy way to track multiple bullets. So still follow me?
Yep.
All right. So let's say that one wolf is going to get by. So one wolf I can't ignore. Well, yeah, one wolf I can't ignore. I killed one. I hid from three. There's one wolf that I have no way to ignore it because I've reached my ignore limit. Does that make sense? So that wolf is going to break something on my property of my choice. Anything I want. It can be a resource. So for every wolf card left over, one thing's going to get destroyed and I'm going to have to throw it away. You know, it doesn't matter what that is. Like I said, I can choose anything. And it doesn't matter if that wolf card has four wolves on it or one. It's one per card. So you kind of have to strategize like, all right, there's four wolf cards. Three of them have one wolf on them and one has four. Now I only have the ability to get rid of three of them. So I'll take care. I'll do it that way. So there's only one card left. Right. The other thing is when you're killing the wolves, you get points for those. When you kill a wolf, you collect it. You put it in your pile, and that never goes away. At the end of the game, they're going to be worth points, and they're worth a pretty good amount of points. If I don't, any wolf that I don't kill, they get attacks me, and any wolf I ignore moves to the next player. Now, the next player is going to have all the wolves they earned from me, plus they're going to have all the wolves I just sent to them. So the fourth player is going to get totally boned.
Yeah.
Fourth player, it's going to suck to be them.
Sure is.
Next turn, they're going to be first player.
Okay.
So the idea is that, like, I can screw you over as fourth player, but it's probably going to come back to me. So the other thing is, if you're in that position and you get a bunch of wolves to you and you can kill them all, that's a ton of points you're going to earn, right? Oh, and the other thing is, so say there's four wolves on a card. I have the ability to kill three of them. Doesn't matter. If I can't clear that card, I can't do anything about it.
Okay.
Make sense?
Sure, because one of them's still going to get through.
Right. And if one gets through, then...
still going to wreck your crap.
And that card's going to move along. So I'm not going to get any points for that, because the only way I get points is if I can take that card.
Got it.
Okay. So we do that. Then we go to the dawn cycle, which is the first cycle of every round. And at dawn, player shifts over to the next person. So now they're first player. Everybody draws back up to five day cards in their hand. And you can now trade any leftover resources you have out, anything on your property. You're like, I really want that cabin, Jason. All right, let's talk. Maybe you trade me some wolf pelts. Maybe I trade you this. Nothing is off the table. You can trade however you want. Because you're homesteaders and you're working together, even though you're kind of all screwing each other.
Right.
So when you really host someone, they might not trade with you. Right? Because I wanted kind of that social aspect to the game. Because you are like a small community. After that, it's just rinse and repeat. The game ends when the day cards run out, which should always happen before the wolves die. Oh, and any wolves that got ignored by the fourth player or got through, they go on the bottom of the wolf of the night deck.
Okay.
Which means that theoretically the strongest wolves by the end is what you're going to be getting constantly.
Yeah.
Because, it's, and one more thing, the night cards that are not wolves, those get discarded every time.
Okay.
So it becomes a pure wolf deck eventually to try and scale into the game.
Got it. Okay. All right. So there are four people around this table here. It's you and me and our wives. Okay. So it's so I've got my five resource cards here, right? All right. So you take one of mine. I pick up a knight card. And then Steph comes and takes one of my resource cards.
No. You can only take from the person on your left.
Only on the person on your left.
So I draft one from you, and then I'm next, right? So if I draft one from you, and then you, because you're to my left and Steph is to my right, she's okay. going to draft from me.
Okay.
So it's always the person on your left.
Always the person on your left is going to take the card from you.
Does that make sense? And the person on your left is who you're going to send your wolves to. Sorry, the person on your right is who you send your wolves to. The
person who took all your resources yes. is who...
Yep.
Okay.
Basically, you're pressing your own luck, but you're also pressing other people's luck if you're not the fourth player, because yeah. you can always choose to send the wolves to them with penalty. I mean, yeah. something's going to happen to you, but...
Yeah, I'll be interested to see how that plays. I worry that player one is going to have a mega advantage, and whoever, like, player three is in the first round is just going to get just horribly obliterated. Mm-hmm. Or maybe even player two on that first round is just going to get totally wrecked. Because when the cards run out, whoever happens to be player four at that time is going to be the worse off.
By the end, it shouldn't matter as much. By the end, player four... By the end, every player should really be able to ignore a lot of the wolves
mm-hmm.
because it scales really easily. You don't need very many resources to start buying stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like everything starts with ignore one wolf and then starts to build very quickly to ignore this, mm-hmm. ignore that. And you also have a lot of things you can sacrifice. You know, you've got these animals that aren't worth very many points. So yeah. they're pretty easy to sacrifice. Or you sacrifice a cheap upgrade.
Okay.
And now you're, you know...
Got it. Yeah, I guess I'm remembering Nightfall and how I just did not enjoy that at all, because in Nightfall, the first couple of rounds of the game was everybody fight each other, and then the next six rounds were not doing anything at all, and then the last few rounds were everybody fight each other again, and then it was over.
Mm-hmm.
And I worry about that structure not being all that compelling.
And also, to be helpful, everyone starts the game with a lean-to, which uh-huh. allows you to ignore one wolf.
Okay.
And bullets. One thing of bullets. So on turn one, you could theoretically ignore one wolf and kill four.
Okay.
Yeah. And again, I'm hoping that the trading, the social mechanic with it,
mm-hmm.
makes you have to think about whether or not you really yeah. want to hose other people.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah. I mean, I'm very interested to see how that works out. Obviously, I have some concerns about the balancing of it.
Oh, me too.
Yeah.
I mean, I have to yeah. see it be played to figure out, you know. I know yeah. we're going to do a play test. It may just be with two of us. It'd be great if we could get mm-hmm. a third person in on that yeah. because the dynamic works a little different mm-hmm. then. But in a two-player game, you even more don't want to hose the second player because
yeah.
they're going to hose you right back the next turn.
In that two-player game, so basically in any round, I could choose to not take any resources from anyone.
Well, from the always the person on your left.
Yeah, well, yes. okay, not take any resources from the person. And then I'm fat and happy.
Because
I got my lean-to and I got my bullets and I'm good.
If you're first player, sure. But you're getting more points by killing wolves. And if you don't take anything, there's no wolves to kill.
So the only way to get points is to kill wolves.
You also get points from building, but the only way okay. to build stuff is to take cards,
okay.
which is going to draw wolves.
Yeah.
See what I mean?
Okay.
So it's pretty tight together.
Mm-hmm.
To build things, you have to get cards. To get wolves, you also are taking cards. So, I mean, one should beget the other is the idea.
Yeah. All right.
So we'll see. I mean, yeah. I really love the social aspect of I can see what's going to happen to you and I can choose to use that how I want to.
Yeah.
I can be nice about it. I can be like, mm-hmm. hey man, this is honestly, you probably should stop. Or I can be like, go for it, man. You'll be good. Don't worry. You got this. It's going to be a piece of cake.
Mm-hmm.
And then we turn them around and you've got like 15 wolves bearing down on you.
Mm-hmm.
And the wolves, they're primarily one wolf. Then there's some twos. There's a few less threes, even less fours. And then there's three alpha wolves.
Mm.
Alpha wolf cannot be ignored, and it takes, you have to kill him as if you were killing three wolves.
Mm.
There's only three of those in the deck. They're worth a crap ton of points. And the big thing is you can't ignore them. So mm-hmm. like they will damage you. They yeah. will break some of your stuff.
Okay.
So.
Well, cool. Yeah. Let's give it a shot, man.
So
let's try it.
Yeah. So we'll see. I mean, I'm excited about it because, there's just a lot of things about it that I like and I feel like are going to work pretty well, but I mean, so many times,
yeah.
you know, you feel like you're good with a proto, and then you try and it doesn't.
All falls apart.
You know, in this case, I've written a lot of the rules, and mm-hmm. I had the rules written before I made the proto. It wasn't just kind of like, sometimes you make a proto and it's kind of amalgamous mm-hmm. in your head, and you've got like this, oh, I've got, you know, these few rules in my head, and I've got these card ideas. Let's make a proto.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then it's terrible.
Yeah.
In this case, I feel a little better about it, but okay. Who knows?
Sure.
It could be terrible. Yeah. So.
Okay.
Yeah. Right
on. Cool. Good stuff. Well, we are almost out of time here.
So let's got some questions. Well, not some questions, sorry. We got some comments from some people. And so first one I'm going to read is from Neil Roberts, a mm-hmm. Good buddy. He said that we talked about dealing with printers, right? And he said we should check out episode 24 of the Happy Mitten podcast. We were talking about the Happy Mitten people earlier.
Yeah.
They interview Michael Lee from Panda. From Panda Game Manufacturing, and he talks about how the company has really had to spend a lot of time adapting to support first-time printers. And that's really cool. That's really great that they kind of have an initiative for that.
Yeah.
And they said they spend as much time doing that as they do actually printing games. So that's awesome. Like, good for them for being mm-hmm. so that, and that's Panda. But the Happy Mitten podcast number 24, check that out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we got also another email from Ed Wet. I hope I pronounce this right. Ed Wettig, I believe your last name is. He says, "Hey, Rob and Jason, I was listening to episode 91, and you mentioned the Pirates Constructible game. That's the game where you punch the pirate ships out of little plastic cards that I really think is super cool." He says, "Years ago, I was a privateer. That's an organized play person for WizKids, and I ran the Pirates game for several years. We used to have events every week at my friendly local game store, but then WizKids stopped supporting the game, meaning no more prize support. I eventually moved on to other games, but there's still a dedicated group at the friendly local game store that plays once or twice a month."
That's awesome.
"They even have sealed pack games, which is super cool."
That is.
"When I was a privateer, I created a bunch of reference documents for the game." He put the attached a bunch of that stuff onto the email, an FAQ, some errata for the game, a keyword reference sheet, and a list of unique treasures. And he says, hopefully those will come in handy in playing the game, which is, I'm sure they will in the future. He said, if you want more ships, I have tons of extras and duplicates that I'm willing to send to you. Let me know if you're interested and send me your address and I can mail some to you." That's super awesome and a amazingly generous offer. Don't send me that stuff though, please. Save that for somebody else who will probably play the game a lot more than I have. Because like I said, I mean, I think it's a super cool game. I have a big stack of them already that have been sitting in a drawer for too long. And if you send me that stuff, I'm afraid it'll just go back in the drawer. But I really appreciate the offer.
But we'll keep you in mind in case Rob ever breaks all of his ships or something. Thank you, though. That's really nice of you to offer
maybe
that.
Maybe Jason wants some, though.
Well, I mean, I'll probably just use yours.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. But yeah. So thank you, Ed. That's cool. And I'm glad to hear that people still remember the game and like it.
Yeah. That's super awesome.
Yeah.
I got another one here from Devin. And Devin said, Devin Tessers, if I'm pronouncing that right. And actually, I already responded to this one, he asked a good question. I wanted to get back to him right away. This was sent a while back. He says, "Hey, my name is Devin. I've been working with a couple friends here in Salt Lake City to design a couple of board game prototypes, and we're planning on going to Gen Con this summer and hopefully get one of them published, but I'm not exactly sure how to go about that."
Yeah,
neither are we.
Right. No. It's a good question, buddy.
And, at the con, is there open space to set up your demo, or do I have to go to booths? Should I try and contact publishers ahead of time, and so I can meet them at Gen Con, you know, all this, yeah, all the general questions, right?
Yeah.
And then he also wanted to thank us because he's a new listener, but he's already pretty much probably by now gotten through our entire archive. So
wow, nice.
Good for you, man.
Yeah.
Thank you. And I responded to him, like I said, I responded to him via email because I wanted to make sure to get back to him right away.
Yeah.
But so this is basically what I said, and it's the same type of thing you're thinking too, which is, mm-hmm. you know, you can email publishers. You can try and get time with them. It can be very hard if they don't know you, right?
Right.
The biggest thing we've found that you can do is become friends with people who publish games. Become friends with other good designers. You know, be part mm-hmm. of the community. Because when you're part of the community, it becomes a lot easier to talk to these people and to meet these people. I mean, I personally know probably like, and you do too now, probably 8 publishers like that we've just like people we've met that are publishers. Not that necessarily we're trying to pitch games to them mm-hmm. or something all the time, but like once you start to learn who those people are and know them, if you do want to pitch something to mm-hmm. them, I think they're going to be a bit more open to at least taking a look at it for you. because they know you.
Yeah.
And they know you're not trying to waste their time. And the other thing I said was, really study your publishers and make sure that you're not wasting their time by submitting a game that they're never going to publish.
Right.
You know, and that's just so important, you know.
It sure is.
Because, first of all, it's just respectful because you don't want to... you don't want to pitch something that's, you know, if they're a family friendly company and you pitch a game that's like all about like zombies and like super hardcore, probably not a good fit.
Right.
So just think about that.
Yeah. I mean, yes, you should email publishers in advance and try and set up some meetings. Yes, you absolutely should do that.
But it's harder than it sounds sometimes.
Don't get discouraged if a lot of them don't get back to you because they don't know you and they don't know who you are. Don't let that beat you down. And make sure that you're contacting a publisher that your game would be a good fit with. Yeah.
Right. Can you go say hi to people at booths and ask to talk to people? You absolutely can.
Yeah.
But they might be too busy and just respect that. And the other thing you said, is there an open area where I can demo stuff to them? It's called Unpub.
Yeah.
Yes. You should. And I sent you a bunch of info about Unpub, because Unpub is one of the best ways to do that stuff. Mm-hmm. So, because publishers really respect the Unpub program, several of them. I mean, at Unpub 4, there was probably 10 publishers there. They all respect that program. They respect people that are a part of it.
Yeah.
Because they know that you're there trying to make your games better.
Yep.
So that is probably the best piece of advice.
Yeah.
But really being part of the community is really helpful.
Yeah, absolutely.
This question is from Shu Lee. And Shu asks, how do you guys find time to play test games and still play the already published games you know and love and try new games? I find the biggest roadblock in my designs is finding time to play test. Is that something you could mention on the show?
I don't do very well at that.
No, neither do I.
No, it's, I envy people who are able to do that because I struggle. It's not easy.
No, I mean... I would say the best thing we have going for us is we pretty much exclusively play prototypes together.
Yeah.
Unless we get together with our wives.
Right.
Like the four of us.
Yeah.
And then we play published games.
Right. Right. Yeah. And really the only reason that we're able to play test now as much as we do is because we happen to work together again.
Right.
You know, and so we're at the same place on our lunch break. If it weren't for that, it would be still really hard to get any play testing done. I mean, you just kind of have to decide... you have to just decide to make it happen. And I know that when I was like going back to, cause I was talking about Rumplebum before, when I knew that I needed to have Rumplebum working and I needed to have it, I needed to know if it was going to work or not within a certain deadline, I made it happen. I called people and I said, hey, let's get together for a game night and to help me test this game. I went out and I made plans, and I was kind of aggressive with some of our friends to say, hey, I really need your help with this. I really need your help with this because I knew that I had a deadline.
Right.
And if you're really serious about it, then you need to get out there and you need to organize that and you need to make that happen. You need to organize a playtest group. You need to get in touch with people and try and make that happen. And that's just for playtesting. I mean, when it comes to playing other publishers, other designers' games, man, it's tough.
And it's easier to get people for that because,
when you're already devoting your social gaming time to working on your own project, that's time you're not spending on playing another game that you already know is fun or that you want to try because you've heard it's good. Right.
And that's something that we plan on focusing on more with work because we're moving places to a bigger place that'll have more opportunity for that. So we're talking about once a week doing playtesting, once a week trying to get together a game lunch hour where we play only published games.
Right.
And that, I think, will be really beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
Two quick more things here. David Wilkinson has commented a few times. He just wanted us to – he said, thanks for the show. He also wanted us to know that he uses meetup.com to try and find people to meet with to play games on playtesters and such. So – that's thought I'd throw that out there. And then we have one more here. And it is from David Pyra. And he just gave some awesome comments about my train robbery game. And he had some thoughts on how he said he was a little bummed it turned into a micro game because he really liked the idea that it was like Mexican train dominoes.
Yeah.
He suggested that one of the best things you could do would be adding new trains, like new cars, to your opponent's trains to try and make the trains fit what you want more. Meaning like, hey, I have all triangles here. Sweet. Well, now you have a circle. Like adding to the enemy. That's a really good idea.
It is a good idea.
I know thematically you had an issue with that because the trains are moving.
Right.
But he fixed it like this. He said, what if it's not that you're adding trains, it's that you're discovering more trains, more cars, as you move down the back of the train. And that actually makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, that's not bad.
So
that's not bad at all.
So that was good. That was good feedback. I don't know if I'm going to end up making it a bigger game. But yeah. So yeah, thank you for those notes there.
Yeah, good stuff.
And
is that all we got?
Yeah. All right.
Okay, that's all we got. So yeah, a couple last reminders since I've been talking about it so much. Don't forget the Rumplebum Academy for Bug-Based Baking is available on the Game Crafter. It's just $10.99, guys. It's a great little set. I did manage
to steal.
Yeah, it's a steal. I did manage to get an updated version of the box art on there. Oh, and check out the video review from To the Table. They did a quick video review on Rumplebum Academy, and thank you very much to David for that review. I really appreciate it.
Very thorough.
Very thorough. Yeah, he did a great job, and he does a lot of video reviews on a lot of games from Game Crafter and from other sources, so it's a pretty cool resource. Don't forget about our holiday game contest in combination with Mr. Scott King, a photographer extraordinaire. We want you to pitch a game to us. So send us an email, pitch a game based on an obscure holiday. Get that to us by the end of March.
Yep, got a couple more weeks here.
Uh-huh, and the winner will get a free photography session with Scott. He will photograph your game prototype, or a published game that you really like. Second place gets a bucket of 1,000 cubes, which we love very, very much.
Yeah.
So get those in by the end of March, and we'll pick a winner after that. And if you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter @podcastbtg. Jason is @JASlingerland, and I am @poorly_designed. And you can like us on Facebook, and you can give us a 5-star review on iTunes. The more of those we get, the better. And you can also remember to tune in to Something From Nothing, our bi-weekly video show, where me and Jason and TC and Chevy hang out with other designers and talk about design, talk about stuff we're working on, kind of talk about whatever we want to talk about. And now, if you can't tune into that live every Sunday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, you can listen to the audio from that as a podcast. It's also now available on iTunes. So that's pretty exciting. And that's going to wrap it up. So thanks once again, everybody, for listening.
Good night.
Good night. Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios.
All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are the property of the Building the Game podcast.
Next time on Building the Game.
I'll let you know if he's coming your way.
Thanks. I'm going to keep looking because there's a large bug behind my back.
It's not large. It's about the size of a dime.
I bet it's almost the size of a nickel. I'm not going to get close enough to measure it.
It's fine.
Normally, they just keep charging at me.
You're really a little girl about this kind of stuff.
I don't like bugs, man.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
It's a good thing you were never a Boy Scout. Maybe you should have been a Boy Scout.
So I wish I'd been a Boy Scout.
You could have gotten over all this.
My mom would have let me be a Boy Scout because she was overprotective. Which is probably why, like, I love all the, like, survival stuff now and, like, the outdoorsy stuff, because I was deprived of it as a child.
Yeah.
So.
Ridiculous.
That's one thing I'm going to teach my kid. Not like Doomsday Prepper stuff, because that's just weird.
That's super weird, yeah. All right, moving on.
If you're a builder out there and you're a Doomsday Prepper, we're not looking down on you.
No. Well, maybe a little.
Robin, I respect you, but I'm not willing to take it that far.
Moving on.
Moving on.